From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.
Have mercy, Mr. Attitude, Eric Wiltshire.
Secretary Ed Davies said, just be sensible. Get a full tank of petrol.
Whoa.
You can't get one because they're only a 30 quid at the end.
Wait, excuse me.
Fade him out again. Fade him out.
I will.
Lee, I hate to tell you this.
That's my case.
Lee.
Yes?
Closer to the microphone, dear.
Yes?
We ended part one. We lost about 3 minutes of you during the ad break.
And we
came back just as you were finishing your rant.
Well, I hope the ladies and gentlemen write in and complain.
But I will add. I will add to your. Let's give you another one of those stupid theories.
Go on, man.
So basically, we know that the tanker drivers are talking to the organisation called ACAS, which sort of sits in the middle as a conciliation service between employers and people that work for them. Yep. So it's all getting a bit tetchy. So the government says, "I know what we'll do. We'll tell everybody."
Take some money out of it.
No, we'll tell everybody. So they fill their cars up with petrol or diesel, because normally they wouldn't bother, because a lot of people actually only fill up maybe once a month. Right? So, which gives them enough time to get more supplies out to the garage forecourts. If it was that they then said, we're going on strike, they have to have a ballot, which takes another couple of days, and there's a five-day sort of bit in the middle of this where they have to call the strike, so everybody knows. By which time, all the forecourts are full up with diesel, and they can be on strike for a couple of weeks, and nobody would even notice.
I think that's very clever. I think that this government isn't clever enough to have thought of that, though. I think that takes somebody out in Slovakia to think of that.
Boom, boom, very good.
By the way, there's some very sad news this afternoon, because one of the unfortunate things is that the government, or some members of the government, then started saying to people, let's fill up jerry cans and start storing.
Yeah,
and I understand
I was going
this,
to say that, yeah.
And that's been criticised for being dangerous. And in fact, this afternoon, some woman has been involved in a fire and she's suffering 40% burns because precisely they were doing that.
On that point as well, quite honestly, quite seriously, when they came out and made this remark, we were in what is classed as a heat wave. And so if you were carrying plastic containers of petrol or diesel about, those containers could quite well start to expand and ultimately explode. It's a dangerous time to do it. This government
no,
didn't
they wouldn't
care.
Explode.
Didn't think,
Lee,
well,
Lee,
I think
Lee.
I think that this is a government wheeze. I'm sure that Lee's right. You know, there was some agenda. This advice wasn't given accidentally,
no.
But I think it's definitely backfired.
Yeah, and let me just calm everybody down a minute on the physics, the physics side of things. If it was a plastic container, and yes, it will expand. The worst thing that will happen is the plastic container will split,
and the
fuel will go on the floor. It doesn't explode. It would only explode
until it gets in contact with your roll up.
Yes.
Yeah. Your roll-up, your cooker, your lights, anything that has a spark attached to it.
A light doesn't have a spark attached to it. It's the switch.
It could touch your... You could switch your light on. It could fall out of the ceiling.
Yes.
It could smash on the floor onto the wood.
Yes.
And then that could create a spark. And your whole house, the street and the village could explode.
Yes. Lee's got a great trait in his family. When the chimney's on fire at one end of the village, by the time they've passed it around, the house has burnt down. There's also been some insanity regarding pasties.
Oh, it's absolutely...
Well, do people know what a pasty is?
Well, I would say in a lot of countries, no.
No,
we wouldn't.
Well, a pasty is basically a handbag created for English farm workers. Serious. It's a handbag which is then held in the hands. It contains meat and potato, gravy and peas and various other bits of vegetables.
Uh-huh.
And the farm workers would pick it up, put it under their arm and walk off down the street to the fields to do the work.
The handbag part, we have to say, is made of pastry.
That's right.
So it's a convenient way of carrying your meals. But I think actually it was for Cornish tin miners originally.
Yeah, and what they did was they made the pastry thicker at one end so they could hold on to it and they didn't need to wash their hands before they ate their food.
And I understand that the original pasty, because it would be the missus, her at home, her indoors, who would make it for her man. And one side, one end would be meat, and the other end would be dessert. That's not true?
No. Oh, okay. That is described better as a Bedfordshire clanger. And you can look it clanger. If you can look it up on the web.
Right.
There is a recipe for it. It's made with suet pastry, and at one end it is meat, potatoes, and everything else.
Yes.
The sausage roll shape thing continues. So pastry in the middle, and on the other side of it is a jam roly poly. It's called a Bedfordshire clanger.
And I would have thought, Mark, as an ex-lawyer. Or as a lawyer, that you would have known all about suet.
Well, exactly. Anything made of suet, I would know about. That's true. That's right. But of course, it's a bit. I suppose nowadays, I mean, it's a bit like a samosa, which is, you know, the same kind of thing, but a lot smaller, containing a nice sort of, you know, very, very delicious, spicy mix of vegetables.
A little what? That's it. For children to taste. That's a little handbag for children.
Yeah, but
well, that's
listen,
right.
Yes. We haven't
which
told.
Is an Indian pasty.
Time out. We haven't told the listener what the purpose of this story is yet.
Is there a purpose?
They forgot. Well, the purpose of this story is that the bakery chain, Greggs, which is the biggest bakery chain in the UK, as far as I'm aware, are now threatening to go on a march of the bakers against this new ridiculous thing that the government's brought in this pie-eyed attempt to bring more money into the country, and that is to tax hot pasties.
Yes.
Put VAT on hot pasties. The little handbags for tin miners and farmers was invented as cheap, portable food for people.
Yeah.
And now they're putting VAT on it. And it all depends how hot the pasty is. So the poor little shop worker on minimum wage has to decide whether that pasty is hot enough to actually incur a VAT tax, or it's too cool so it can just be sold as an ordinary pasty.
We should tell the people at home that VAT, which stands for value-added tax, is the same as sales tax in America.
Absolutely.
And it is added onto some products, but in England, or in the United Kingdom, there is no VAT, I'm very pleased to say, on food. There is in France. There's no VAT on books. There is in France. There's no VAT on children's clothing. There is in France. But where it's takeaway food, so there's an element of service, then there is VAT.
Mm. And if you
that's wrong. Where there is takeaway food, you buy it to take home and cook, there's no VAT.
Why should there be VAT on food? The problem is most people in this world now work away from their home, so they can't make something.
Where there is service included, it's currently VAT'd. Yeah. Meaning,
I know what I'm saying. Why should it be?
Well, I think you're dead right. I mean, I think that, you know, people who rely on a sandwich during their busy days and this sort of thing and haven't got a load of money, I really think that it ought to be revised downwards. And that would do the government some good if they want to get their reputation back, which clearly they don't.
And not only pastry taxes looming, fuel's going up, and the cost of sending a Christmas card is going up as well.
Yeah, from 46p to 60p, from 36p to 50p on the 30th of April. How ridiculous is it? I was trying to think about this story and I thought, is the Royal Mail actually valid in this day and age where you can send emails? And of course it's valid because of secrecy and because of security. Emails can be hacked and he's put me off now, Mark. Did you see that? Did you see the way he put me off?
Yeah, but go on, carry on. I was listening.
But quite honestly, emails are not secure. It is not a secure way of sending documents.
A Christmas card.
Well, I'm talking about other things. Yeah, I'm saying, is the Royal Mail valid? I think the Royal Mail is valid. Christmas cards is a different thing. Of course it is. You can send internet cards. A lot of people send those now. Mm. But to actually start to attack the very basics of the security of information, the passage of information from one person to the other, by taxing, by increasing the value of it out of all proportion, and it's also that you can privatise the company ultimately in the next few years, because that's what this government wants to do, privatise everything from pasties to post.
Hmm.
Well, I have to say that with all this, the value of, you know, or the, rather the cost of mail going up and the amount of money that these people are able to make the Royal Mail, what have you, one thing I'd like to see is some proper responsibility, because I don't know if you know, but actually they're protected from court actions for breach of contract by the Post Office Act 2000. And that's just amazing to be in this situation where you can actually pay the stamp, you can pay whatever it is to have your parcel delivered, and if they muck it up, you can't sue them for breach of contract. Where on earth do we get this kind of protective idea for this industry in the 21st century.
I think you'll find that only applies to Royal Mail, not Parcel Force.
Well, yeah, and also with Royal Mail, I'm not sure. With Royal Mail, you can actually pay a premium, and you're quite right, you have to pay a premium. It's not, the contract is not enforceable on the ordinary prices, but if you pay a premium, you can then guarantee delivery, or they will have to pay compensation for it.
You're quite right, but the compensation they pay is all set in stone, and basically, you know, why do we have to pay a premium to get what you've contracted to do anyway? I mean, it's like me going to a restaurant and say, well, I'll have this, please. I'll have this pasty and chips. And they'll say, okay, sir, but we don't guarantee we'll get it to you. But if you pay a premium, then we'll guarantee we get it to you and you'll eat it.
I think it's ridiculous. Very good point. Very good. And elegantly put, too.
Okay. A home alone, you'll never get a loan now, they say. But why is that?
Well, it's just one of those incredible things, isn't it? I'll tell you what really alerted me to this is that the bank rates have remained the same in England for X number of years, particularly since we hit this incredible crisis. But the interest rates on loans and mortgages have started to creep up. Mine, I was told last week, is going to go up. How it can go up and why, I do not know. People in Britain don't have any money. Now, lenders are actually, as the economy is supposed to be getting back on its feet, and more importantly, builders are starting to consider building, lenders are putting another squeeze on credit and lending to people. That means that we are not going to be able to buy houses anymore in this. Well, and everything is going to collapse again. I think it's just ludicrous.
How can they put the charges up, Mark?
Well, they just seem to be a loose cannon, these people. They do.
Yeah, they could just do it, can't they?
You know, I suppose they're all trying to sort of gather in cash as quickly as possible. You know, I suppose companies like Lloyds and RBS and Halifax, they really, you know, want to get to a position where they will be sold off and they can be private and they can have their autonomy and their bonuses and all this again. And they don't care how they do it. And I have to say that, you know, I do think that, you know, I mean, the argument all the time is that, well, you know, these banks are businesses, aren't they? Well, yes, they're businesses, but they're businesses that have failed. They're now owned by the taxpayer or substantially owned by the taxpayer. And I think, you know, for at least that while, we should get some benefit from them. And that doesn't only mean that we should get a profit out of them. It means that we should get a helping hand up into the recovery. These people should be practicing citizenship, but they don't know what it means.
Correct, Amondo. Tesco's have gone mad as well. This is Lee's consumer complaint spot.
I'll do this really quickly because I think it's absolutely shameful. And I have to say up front that Tesco have had plenty of time to reply to this and haven't bothered. That's how interested they are in customer service, right? As Eric will verify, the power pack to my laptop packed up on Monday of this week. So I needed it to work. I need everything, all sorts of things really. So what I did was I phoned up Tesco's using their consumer line, which is linked straight to the store that you want to know, where you can ask if they have the product that you want in stock. And I did that, and they said, yes, we have it here. I asked, have you got a power pack thing charger for a PC? They said, yes. I said, have you got only one or have you got loads? He said, we've got loads. I've got one in my hand here that starts at £10.97 and we've got others at different prices. We've got loads. So we set off at 7:30 on a Monday night, missing Coronation Street, I must say, ladies and gentlemen, to go to Tesco's, right, which is a 40-mile round trip.
Tesco's where?
Stafford.
At Stafford, right?
Yeah.
40
miles from where I live, round trip.
We have to get them to build one next to you.
No, not Tesco's. Not Tesco's. So I set off there, £8 a gallon, ladies and gentlemen, for petrol. Went up there, went in, said, come to get a power pack, phoned up about it, said, oh, I'm sorry, we don't in.
What?
We don't what?
Yeah, we haven't got any in stock.
Well, it's amazing.
I said, I've just phoned you up, and you told me you got loads of them, and actually you had one in your hand for £10.97. She said, well, who did you actually speak to? I said, I don't know who I spoke to. I used your line to phone up the store to find out whether you got them in stock. And we all just, well, I'm sorry, sir. We can't help you if you don't tell us who it was you spoke to. I said, how am I supposed to know who spoke to? It went on and on and on. It went like that. Until the night manager, a lady who shall remain nameless, and I will not name her, actually, turned to me. We didn't lose. Andrea was with me. never a lost temper, never a harsh word or anything. Turned to me and said, "I'm sorry, sir, you're making me very nervous. I will have to call security." I said, "All I'm saying is, you call me in here, it's cost me £8 in petrol to make this journey, and you are offering me no resolution to this at all." And she said, "Well, what would you like me to do?" I said, "Well, why have I got to decide what you should be doing, right? You could offer me a voucher for petrol to cover the, because it's not cheap, £8 for a failed journey when you confirmed that something was there. You could have offered me a cup of coffee to say, sorry, sir, we've made a mistake. Go to our cafe and have a cup of coffee on the shop. Anything, or even an apology." She didn't even say sorry. Now, what happened then? I found Tesco PR people to give them the chance to reply to this. They've not bothered to reply. They don't care. They know that we're telling millions of people of what happened in one of their stores. They don't care. That's how much they care about their customers. The next day, I went down to a little corner shop in Newport, Shropshire, Acer Computers, the place that I'd bought
this
from.
It's not called Acer Computers.
I know, it's funny that, isn't it? I thought that, but it is.
Is it?
Is it really?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I thought that. Anyway, and yes, it's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, I went in there, said, "You know this thing I bought off you last year? It was out of its date. It had gone for a year, right?"
Yeah.
I said, it's knackered. It won't work. And
I can imagine you walking in and going, "I've got a knackered one."
Yeah. Yeah. You know what he did? He tested it. He says, "You've had a surge." I said, "What do you mean I've had a surge?" He says, "Because
at your age, you still have viruses."
I have some surges, I tell you. I have some surges to do all sorts of terrible things. And he said, "Yeah, because the what's that thing that they have in the plug that bursts it?"
Fuse.
A fuse. He says the fuse has gone in the plug and the whole thing's knackered.
All right.
I said, "Oh, heck." He says, "Well, don't worry about it. I haven't got any in stock." He says, "But borrow mine, right, and I'll get you on." I said, "Oh, well, that's all right. How much are they now?" He says, "Don't worry about that. I'll get it for you."
Oh. Where's he getting his one from? Tesco's.
Yeah, he's got a Tesco. That's why he got on it. He's got
that's
a lot.
Right. He's bought them all.
Yeah, but if you think that bloke ain't making the same amount of money as Tesco's,
yeah,
and that's the sort of customer service you got from a little shop,
Lee,
and look at the customer service you got from Tesco's.
Lee, how long have we been doing this programme?
Loads.
And how many times have I said, go to your local consumer, your local computer shop, because you'll get far better service?
Absolutely, and there is a case in question.
So why on earth did you go to Tesco's in the first place?
Because Tesco's was open and they told me they got one.
You should have waited.
I couldn't because I had to do my work.
Oh, God. Anyway, Mr. Murdoch appears to be really hacked off.
Oh, I'm tired now. Can somebody else do?
Tell me about it. I'm sure he is.
Why?
Well, I think it. Because people have been writing bad things about him, saying things that he believes are untrue.
Right. Meaning?
He has the perfect right to say that the BBC is making inaccurate claims about him, and he thinks that they should apologise. And he's gone out on Twitter, and he's tweeted about it. And he says that they are making gross misrepresentations about him. Good on you. Good on you, Rupert.
Well, that's really funny, because Mr. Murdoch doesn't normally do this sort of thing.
Well,
if you look back, typically Mr. Murdoch will just go, "Yeah, never mind." And I'm just wondering if it's because the BBC and Sky are always at loggerheads over something, and one being NDS, which is a News Corp subsidiary which does all the technical stuff for the EPG and da-da-da-da-da on Sky, which, of course, the BBC has to pay huge amounts of money to for nothing, which, of course, then Sky markets the fact that the BBC are there to sell dishes, directly or indirectly. So it just makes me wonder if
what
there is...
What sort of dishes? Crockery?
Satellite dishes.
Oh, sorry.
Mm. And it just makes me wonder if this just isn't an escalation of the normal banter that those that have been within the industry, as I have, knows goes on all the time.
I think it quite likely is, but I think Mr. Murdoch is making a point that he's been hammered from hill to burn for what his newspapers have said about people, rightly or wrongly, whether he's right or wrong. People have come out of the woodwork to attack him and his organisation, and now he's having a go back. Good on you, Rupert.
But he hasn't had a go at Sky News when they've done it.
Well, no. Well, he's probably only just thought of it. He's probably only just got himself a Twitter account.
Oh, right. I understand now. oh, well, never mind. Apparently, the 81-year-old does tweet. So therefore, there's no excuses for Messrs. Banks and crew not to tweet either.
I tweet.
Do you?
Don't really, do I?
No, you don't.
I've got a Twitter account. I'm going to start, though.
You've had a Twitter account for many, many years, and I've been a follower of yours for many, many years. And how often do you tweet?
Well, actually, if you think, now you've got to be fair about this and truthful.
Yeah.
I actually tweet probably about 3 times a week, and I tweet, when I do tweet, I probably tweet about 20 tweets at a time.
No, you're not tweeting. It's automatic because it's from your Scribd news account.
Well, that's what I use my tweet for.
Mm.
Are you saying you want me to tweet?
I want you to tweet yourself.
Yeah, not it's myself. Actually not very interesting, I'm going to say.
No, exactly.
Knowing what you're reading.
I was following you.
But I have to say, in the end, I unfollowed. I'm going to say this. This is not a sign of anything against our deep friendship.
Right.
And Mark, I don't feel it's any great loss either.
Ouch! By this July, mobile firms will be forced to lower the price of making a call or downloading data within the EU, it has to be said, not outside of the EU. And over a year ago we reported this, didn't we, Lee?
We did. Done roaming. And we were right. And that young lady at the EUEC thing, who came on the programme to talk about it, was right too. We have saved the world from roaming charges, which were absolutely hideous.
Mark's not going to like
this. They're still high. They're still reckoning it to be 24p a minute. It's still an awful lot.
It is, but when you consider how many networks you're using to do it, it isn't that bad. Well, if you think you're in the EU, right, you're in Slovakia, okay, and then you go roaming to the UK, the cost of a phone call back to Slovakia from the UK is considerably higher than one within the UK. So why shouldn't it be more money?
Well, why doesn't everybody use Skype?
Well, most people do if they're sensible.
Well, that's difficult on their mobile.
No, it isn't. You can use Skype on your mobile.
Well, if you've got access to a 3G network and you're that way inclined.
Yeah, or if you've got a mobile and your office home has got Wi-Fi on it, it will automatically defer to Wi-Fi.
Well, yeah, that's right. But, I mean, you know, if you're travelling...
Oh, true. True.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most people who are in their office or home, they've got access to a fixed line, which probably would be cheaper.
But there again, looking at the costs per meg of 70 cents...
Yes.
And how
59p that is in English money.
And looking at how much Skype costs to run, it'd still be cheaper to use Skype.
Well,
I need to clarify that, but I think that's right.
It is, I'm sure, because when I was in India, I was putting £10 on Skype and I was phoning Britain and everywhere else. And that £10 lasted me 2 months.
No. Well, apparently mobile phones are losing money whilst we're whinging about the cost of it because of billing errors and fraud. Well, tough.
Yeah, but that's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think such a massive industry can be so badly organised and run.
Yeah.
Which means that what you're saying, Mark, is right, because if they're losing all that money, the people who are paying the bills are paying for it.
Well, I mean, you know, whose figures are these? I mean, Juniper Research, who is Juniper Research that's found this? I mean,
quite a big research company.
Well, it does sound amazing that they're prepared to tolerate losing. I mean, mind you, we're talking worldwide, but the whole industry is losing 36 billion pounds per year.
Yeah.
That's just incredible. I mean, are they really losing that much? I have to say, I'm just sceptical of that kind of money.
It's quite interesting, actually, when it says that the mobile industry is actually generating something like £600 billion or $920 billion in a year. And actually, if you take 36 as a percentage of that, it is quite a high percentage. I know it's less than 1%, but it's still a high percentage to just chuck away without any thought or great effort to save. It's phenomenal. That would actually pull Britain, that loss would pull Britain out of the mire in one fell swoop.
True. And whilst we're there on the mobile phones, as we get towards the end of part two, BlackBerry, which is made by RIM, R-I-M.
Yeah. And no jokes about that, Vicar.
No. they've reported $125 million lost in the last quarter. And I have to say, well, I'm not surprised.
Yeah. I mean, are we saying goodbye to BlackBerry?
Well, I've never...
I think goodbye to RIM.
I've never said...
Goodbye, BlackBerry, where could it?
Yeah. Oh, well, I've never said hello to BlackBerry because I can never understand the point.
Well, me neither. I mean, I must say, it just seems to me that they're becoming more and more unpopular, and there are so many problems associated with them here and there about their data problems, and one wonders really whether they're in control of their business anymore.
Well, that's one thing. And as you quite rightly said, there's so many technical problems where the... Part of the BlackBerry system is having this free messaging system, which called BBM, by the way, which teenagers were using quite a lot when they could afford the phones, and allegedly was one of the ways that people were coordinating the riots in London last year.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And the trouble with that is, you know, if you've got what is a business product, which BlackBerry started off being, then become associated with teenage oiks, because you get free messaging on it, so you don't have to pay for your SMS. Mm. It's hardly likely that some... It's probable, actually, that some firms will just ditch BlackBerry because of the bad name they've got.
Right. Got it.
You know, and the other thing is that, you know, there are so many other phones out there, such as Samsung or Sony or HTC, which do so many wonderful things. Why do you need a BlackBerry, which is... Yeah, you know, a bit dinosaurish, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I have a feeling that they're going to have to change change themselves very, very dramatically, or it might be bye-bye.
Yeah, and I have to say, we know Easter's coming because the baggage handlers at Stansted Airport are to go on strike again.
Oh, right. I know, it's just a grand old British tradition, isn't it?
It makes me angry, is what it makes
me. It makes me angry as well.
It makes me incredibly angry because... That's all they do. Nice to see that James Cameron's back from his trip down to the Mariana Trench, the deepest part of the world that you can go to in a boat. And I suppose we better let him get this in before the end, because there's only 30 seconds left. Bob Dylan is to make a UK festival appearance this summer, headlining at Hop Farm.
Which he did. He made the same appearance at Hop Farm last year. No, sorry, 2010. And he's coming back. It will be his only festival appearance in Britain. The 70-year-old His Royal Bobness is going to be there headlining one of the world's greatest rock and roll festivals. Good on you, Bob!
Right. And congratulations to the man in America that's had not only a face transplant, but tongue and jaw transplant as well.
Amazing. Good, yeah.
Absolutely amazing, the technology the doctors have used. And the said gentleman is now trying to find himself a wife. Richard Norris, we wish you all the very best for the future. And our admiration goes to the University of Maryland Medical Center. Well done, everybody. We'll see you next week. That's got to be it. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
From the heart of Europe to the world, RTI.